Meeting of the State Government Finance Committee to order. This is a remote hearing and can be live streamed on the via the House website, www.house.legislature.state.mn, or on YouTube. And it's youtube.me/S4STGOFE. It looks like a QIG. Anyway, and all the meeting, the documents for the meeting are on the Vision website for the State Government Finance. Sometimes it's easier if you go onto the calendar on the House website page and click on the date and then scroll down to where the meeting is. All the documents for the meeting are there. With that, I'm going to unmute everybody and the legislative assistant can take the roll. Sydney, go ahead.
All right. Chair Nelson?
Here.
Vice Chair Cleburne?
Present.
Rep Albright?
Present.
Representative Akam?
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Flyberg?
Present.
Representative Green?
Here.
Representative Hertas?
Present.
Representative Hewitt?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keel?
Here.
Representative Lippert?
Present.
Representative Long?
Present.
Representative Mason?
Present.
Representative Nash?
Here.
Representative Olson?
Present.
Representative Quam?
Present.
Representative Vogel?
Present.
We have a quorum. And members, just to have a lay of the land for today, we've got two bills that we need to get done. One being the elections bill for the COVID-19 emergency contract bill. And I'll move the House File 3499 to be before us. And I'll also move the DE-2-1 amendment. And I will have Mr. Gehring walk us through that. But before we do, members, in your packet or there should be also an eight amendment to the DE amendment, two amendment that has to do with a date change. And it's a technical amendment to modify the amendment. You go on page 5, line 26, where it says December 21st, 2024. That needs to be deleted and insert March 27th, 2022. So, members, do we all understand that? And I guess, do we need to vote on it? Can I just modify my amendment, Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, since this is your DE-2 amendment, you can just incorporate that into your draft.
Okay, I'll just incorporate that into the draft, that change. And so with that, members, Mr. Gehring, you want to walk through the amendment and where we're at with that?
Sure. So, Mr. Chair, I'll walk through the DE-2-1. This draft is a modified draft based on the collection of amendments you saw last week in the committee. So section 1 is a section that provides some special procedures for the 2020 state primary and state general election. The section applies only to those two elections and no others in the future. Subdivision 2, which starts on line 1.9, provides an option for local governments to take a couple of different actions to mitigate the effect of the COVID-19 pandemic. One is to designate polling places up until July 1st of this year, which is an extension of the December 31st usual deadline that is provided in law. A second authority for local governments is to train designated employees of healthcare facilities and hospitals to administer the absentee voting process within those facilities. So under current law, trained election judges typically from the county or city would go into these facilities to administer absentee voting on election day. In this case, the healthcare workers would be trained to do that work. And then the third power that exists for local governments in this bill is to extend the period during which absentee ballots are processed to include up to 14 days prior to the election. And then there's a blank line in there to be filled in by the committee in a minute that allows some processing of absentee ballots after election day. Paragraph B, which you see starting on line 1.21, makes clear that the existing powers that are granted in the election law for local governments to respond to emergencies can apply to the COVID-19 pandemic. And then subdivision 3 allows certain types of election filings to be done electronically. That includes the affidavits of candidacy, nominating petitions, including the collection of electronic petition signatures, requests that write-in candidates' votes be counted, all can be filed for this particular election cycle in an electronic format. Section 2, which starts on 2.19 of the amendment, delays by a few days the deadline for parties to submit their names of nominated presidential electors for the fall, and this is to reflect the scheduling in late August of the Republican National Convention. And then Section 3 of the DE2-1 is appropriating the first pot of HAVA money that's been available, and the committee has heard about this one a couple times in the past. This is sometimes known as HAVA 2.0. This is a $7.38 million federal allocation to Minnesota, as well as a $1.4 million state match to go with the federal appropriation. The authorized uses in subdivision 4 include the uses that the committee has seen in the past, and it also includes some additional uses that you'll see in section 4 related to the COVID pandemic. This particular pot of money would be available to the Secretary of State until December 21st of 2024, which is the five-year window that was allowed in the federal law. And then section 4 is the last appropriation section here. This is the sort of HAVA 3.0 money, which is the money that was made available in March of this year. That's $6.9 million for the state from the federal government, and then the additional $1.3 million 20% state match. The one thing that's a little bit different about this state match requirement is that there's sort of a conditional appropriation here. So there's some discussion of the possibility that the state match requirement will be waived by the federal government in a future stimulus bill. So this language accommodates that and provides that appropriation on July 1st. 2020, if the state match requirement is still in effect on that day. And then the authorized uses you see in subdivision 4, starting on 4.6, are the authorized uses that are more specifically related to the response to the COVID-19 pandemic and includes ensuring health and safety of election officials and voters, including the purchase of sanitation and disinfectant supplies, public outreach and preparations for social distancing, in polling places and around election sites, facilitation, support, and preparation for increased absentee voting that's expected, preparation of training materials and administration of additional training for local officials, and preparations for new polling place locations. The authorized uses also allow local governments to purchase new electronic roster systems. So these are the e-poll books that would meet the requirements that are in existing law. And then the big piece in this list of authorized uses here is a grant program for local governments. In subdivision 5, you see the detail for the grant program. This looks largely like the existing grant program that has been used in the recent past for election equipment purchases by local governments. One thing I'll highlight here is paragraph B on line 5.10. You'll see that the grants to local governments using this federal money would be allowed for up to 75% of the total cost of purchasing electronic roster equipment, and then up to 80% of the total cost of the other activities that are authorized in the section of the bill. And then paragraph D on line 5.21, there's a legislative report that would be required in January of 2021, and then the appropriations would be available in subdivision 6 under this section until March of 2022, which reflects the amendment you just incorporated into this draft. And Mr. Chair, that's the end of the DE2-1.
And members, I guess now would be the time to discuss the filling in that dots that are there for the time after the election. I know last week when we met, we talked about, we had it at 7 days, and there was this discussion about the number of days after the election that people would be comfortable with having that. And so Representative Albright, do you know where you do? What do you feel about that date? How many days after the election? And we'll get some information from the Secretary of State also. But Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that we're going to discuss this amendment and 3499 in a greater context. Pursuant to some actions taken by the majority overnight with regard to another bill that will be taken up next week. I think this amendment in its broader perspective has been hard fought, hard won. We spent a lot of time on this amendment as Secretary Simon, Representative Dean, Representative Nash, and others can attest to. I would offer that for filling in that blank in the context of that global perspective, I would offer up that we don't need any days after the election.
Okay, Representative Nash, I see you have your hand up. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to echo what Representative Albright said. Sorry, I'm having a little. I will say yes. The bill amendment that we're looking to incorporate was something that was talked about. Still, obviously, there's some differences of opinion on certain issues, but brought forward some work that we thought was good. But overnight, we saw some things happen that majority leadership decided to really go a different direction. And I will say that from my perspective, that that was kind of alarming, disappointing, and is going to probably take today's actions and direction in a much different way. So I would echo what Representative Albright said, that days after the election, I'm at zero. And I think, you know, days before has been addressed, but yeah, 0 days after. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Secretary Simon, I think we've had discussions, and you were going to get check with the election officials around the state and what they figured was a good number for them. What did you find out from in your discussions? You're not unmuted yet.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Is that better? Can you hear me okay now? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Yeah, on this business of how much time is needed afterwards. First, let me address the obvious here. I understand that there's some discomfort and disappointment among GOP members that certain parliamentary maneuvers that they're discussing, and I'm sure we'll discuss in this hearing. But I want to make clear, this isn't a provision, this provision about after the election that helps me or helps the DFL. This is your local counties and cities. And I really want to defer, and I hate to ambush her, but I think Ms. Erickson is on the call. I would really benefit, and I think the committee would benefit from testimony, her testimony on behalf of all counties and elections administrators, to hear what she has to say about what would happen if the number were zero. If the number were zero and local elections administrators had no time after the election, zero time, to administer absentee ballots, what, as a practical matter in your counties and cities, not our office, we don't count a single vote. They do, we don't. I'd like to hear from her what she thinks the outcome would be.
Okay, thank you, Representative Secretary Simon. If we could unmute Ms. Erickson. Ms. Erickson, if you can get it, what are your feelings on that number? What should the number be, and why is it important?
Mr. Chair and members, currently under current statute, there is 24 hours that's allowed for election administrators to complete the processing of absentee ballots, which also includes ballots that are mailed in through the mail balloting process or those who vote by no excuses absentee. We are currently able to work within that framework as it exists right now. There is some concern that if the volume of ballots that are received by mail would be significantly higher than what it currently is, particularly where ballots can be returned up until 3 o'clock on election day for absentee ballots or 8 p.m. on election day for mail ballot precincts, that it would take a significant amount of time for the absentee ballot board judges to open and process that volume of ballots that might be coming in on that last day. A lot of this will depend on the size of the precinct and the number of volunteers or the number of staff that they can have assigned to this particular issue. We do feel that if there is no change to the mail balloting threshold, if the current statute currently existing is still the statute that is in play for mail balloting purposes, that those precincts that are townships of any size or cities over 400 outside of the metro area, even if there is an increase in mail balloting in some of those areas, there is a concern that we would need a little bit more time to process potentially. I believe that most of our counties have stated that 3 days would be the max of what would be necessary. In some of these areas, the processing is going to include hand feeding ballots into what are typically used as precinct tabulators, because the availability to either purchase or procure a central count system might be challenging at this time across the country or cost prohibitive at this time for some of our municipalities. And if they do have precinct count equipment that they have available at their counties, they can use that for processing absentee ballots or mail ballots. It does take significantly longer to process them with that system. In fact, we had timed it at one time when my county was still using precinct tabulators. It took 5.3 seconds per ballot to feed it into a tabulator. So the amount of time after election day is simply to get the ballots opened and counted. It's not expanding how long people have to vote. These are ballots that still have to be received by the deadlines that are currently in statute. This wouldn't change that. It just allows for time to get those ballots counted. We only have limited finite resources when it comes to the equipment and people that we have to be able to process those ballots. And especially if we are concerned about providing social distancing for our staff from the standpoint of not having everybody jammed into one room, shoulder to shoulder with a bank of 10 or 15 tabulators to process, there are some concerns that additional time would be necessary. No more than 3 days would probably be needed at the very most. But as I said, right now, there is 24 hours in the current statute that is allowed for.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Erickson. With that, members, I'm going to modify my amendment to fill that date, that remove those dots. And I'm going to put 3 days in that. That'll give them, as Ms. Erickson said, that'll give them time. We're basically going 2 days longer than what current law is. So members, we're going to fill that in as 3 days. And any more discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Simon, I want to address my comments a little bit to you, and you're certainly welcome to respond. And I'll continue on from my earlier comments with regard to overnight developments. But as you are aware, protocol and a precedent between the two caucuses has always been to provide for a strongly bipartisan election bill, one that both sides can agree puts the citizen voter at the center of the decision-making process for them, particularly in light of respecting their constitutional rights to vote, whether that be in person or, as is already in statute, through the mail. Developments outside of this amendment certainly break with that tradition. And so with that in mind, Mr. Chair, I would defer to Secretary Simon for his comments about the developments overnight. I know that it may not be germane, but I think in light of the impact that that would make on moving any type of a bill forward, I'm a bit concerned about the intentions of the majority in the House in terms of what their focus will be going forward on an elections bill. And I'd certainly like to understand where the Secretary of State's office is coming from. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Secretary Simon, if you could be concise.
Yes, I will.
You're in trouble with that, but can you be concise?
I will try. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I only learned about the developments that you're talking about via a text from Representative Nash late last night. So I didn't know anything about this. So I would defer to others who may have. And just for the benefit of the public or others who don't know what we're talking about, apparently a bill has been scheduled for next week. I want to say the 29th in the Ways and Means Committee. An elections-related bill, which contains all sorts of provision, is authored by the chair of the Elections Committee, Representative Dean. So just so everyone understands what we're talking about, that's it. In my understanding, Representative Albright, Representative Nash, is you're not too happy about that. But I would offer this. That is a shiny object that we should not let deter us from this heavily negotiated and thoroughly bipartisan compromise. Now, this compromise is not everything that I wanted. It's far short of what I wanted. And I continue to say that the number one safest way to conduct an election in a pandemic would be to do the full automatic vote by mail. That is not in here. And there are other things not in here that I would have wanted. And I'm sure there are things in here that Representatives Nash, Albright, and others would have wanted. But this was heavily negotiated, including a big sort of summit meeting on Sunday over the weekend, where a number of us, including you, Mr. Chair, were on the phone and staff from both caucuses. And we hammered this thing out. This is exactly the way the process should work. This is a thoroughly negotiated, thoroughly bipartisan compromise, which I support because it's something that can actually get enacted into law and give Minnesotans comfort at a time of a pandemic. So that's all I'll say there. I don't want those other developments. I understand the irritation, but I really ask everyone not to let that shiny object deter us from this heavily negotiated and bipartisan compromise.
Thank you. Representative
Chair.
Representative Albright.
Secretary Simon, I appreciate your candor, and more to the point, I've appreciated your willingness to engage in candid and frank negotiations and a compromise that we did reach over the weekend. So tip of the hat to you. My comments are made, though, in light of this amendment in terms of the direction that the House majority is taking with this and where that leaves the intent going forward. I'm dismayed. I'm also a bit confused in terms of the developments overnight, and they certainly do put a very large question mark and a detraction from what we all spent an incredible amount of time over the weekend hammering out. So, but thank you, Secretary Simon.
Representative Long, you're next on my list. If you can be short.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be short. I just wanted to clarify for the dots. I don't know if this is appropriately directed to Matt Gehring or somebody else, but Representative Nash and Albright had both said 0 days. I wanted to clarify, if we went to 0 days, is that worse than current law, the 24 hours that they currently have?
I think Secretary Simon, did you hear the question, Secretary Simon?
It's 0 additional days.
I really would defer to Mr. Gehring on that. I don't know which would trump which.
Mr. Chair, to clarify my point for the sake of Representative Long's question, your question to me was any additional days after what is in state law, not a detraction back to zero from 24 hours. So Representative Long, my position is that state statute is just fine. you don't need to add any more days. We would stay at the 24 hours. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gary,
sounds like
Mr. Gary, maybe you can answer that. Is that changing that to 0 days after the election, would that trump current law where they've got 24 hours after the election? Mr. Gary.
Mr. Chair, so I think if you were to adopt Representative Albright's amendment, we would just make sure that the intent is clear there. The way that it's drafted right now, it's an option for local governments to extend the processing period. So I think that you could make the case that that the current law would still apply if the local government didn't choose to sort of use this power. So I'm not sure I want to use the words that Representative Long used to characterize the effect, but we could draft it in a way that accommodates Representative Albright's intent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just wanted to make clear that our shared intent is not to disallow processing after the election. Everybody agrees that processing after the election is worth having for local governments. We just started discussing how many days, and the local governments have said 3 days is what they need in the current pandemic, which makes sense to me. Thank you.
Representative Nash, if we can.
Yeah, I'll be brief.
Make it short, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So the Secretary and Representative Albright referenced what happened overnight with the fact that we know that House File 1603 is going to be brought before the committee next week. The all-mail balloting provision is going to be amended into it. And I will echo the concern that I have over what is the intent of House leadership relative to the elections bill. And while the Secretary called this a shiny object, the Secretary is not the Speaker of the House. And the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader apparently have given directions that the position of the House is going to be all-mail balloting and a good number of other things that's in House File 1603. Because of that, from my seat, that casts a huge shadow over this bill. And I will echo what the Secretary said. This is a negotiated bill. There are things in here that I'm still not thrilled with. There's some things that we would like to tighten up on HAVA money and different utilizations of that. And obviously we have a disagreement on the number of days after to process absentee ballots. So we figured that some of this would be negotiated further, but negotiations became almost irrelevant overnight when House leadership, who does make the call on what happens and where things go and what bills come to the floor or don't come to the floor, decided that they were going to go in a completely different direction, contrary to the negotiations that we made in good faith. So for that reason, I don't see how we can support this. And I'm very disappointed that people who were not involved in negotiations just decided to snap their fingers and change absolutely everything. And again, because they are the ones that decide what happens, it's not a shiny object. That House File 1603 is apparently the new House elections bill. So, you know, I think that this is a moot point at this point because that's apparently the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dean, if you can be short and keep it to the amendment that we're on, not anything that might be coming up at a later date. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I was involved in a lot of this negotiation to get to this bill that's before us at the moment. And, you know, there are a lot of factors that are playing into where we are today. I would just say that, you know, in the past, in the House, we have not worked as bipartisanly on elections issues as I think many people would have hoped for. This is clearly an example where we have set aside our partisanship and have sat down to negotiate what was best for Minnesota voters. Ultimately, we have an election that's coming up in August and then in November, and Minnesota needs prepared to actually make that happen. And regarding the, you know, the events that have happened in the last 24 hours or so. I just want to let everyone know and the committee know that I'm supportive of this, not because of all the wonderful things that are in it, albeit there are some good things. I think that as Representative Nash mentioned, you know, there are some things he's not happy that are in there. And I think there are many other folks that are happy that there are some provisions that aren't in there that we would like to see in there. At the same time, I want us to really want all of you to really think hard about Minnesota voters and what we need to do for elections. I certainly understand the disappointment of some members as a result of the decisions of the majority leadership, but I think that this is a good bill. This is evidence of some good work and what can happen when we all enter into a discussion and negotiation on something based on putting the people of Minnesota first. So that would just be my comments. I hope that folks would support this, and you know, we'll have another time and another day to talk about some of the other issues that have been brought up.
Okay, members, I see no more hands. Members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3499, the DE2-1 amendment, as modified by the date change and by adding 3 days, no more than 3 days following the election. And Sydney, if you can take the roll.
Chair Nelson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Albright.
No.
Representative Akam.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Hertas.
No.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Jordan.
Aye.
Representative Keel.
No.
Representative Lippert.
Aye.
Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Eleven ayes and seven nays.
The amendment's been adopted. So, members, on to discussion of the amendment. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe that we're on the bill as amended.
The bill is amended, correct.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'll be brief because I know that we have another bill to take up. But I think that I would share Representative Nash and others who have expressed our disappointment in the developments overnight and how they complicate the global perspective of an elections bill, the precedent that it sets, but also the confusion that it establishes also for a direction as we move to the House floor and also consideration of what the Senate might be doing. Mr. Chair, before we go to a vote for passage of the bill, I would like an opportunity for a final comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? I see no hands up. Representative Nash, I see your hand just went up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to be brief, and I wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Dean for your work in honestly negotiating. And I understand that this was a decision that was not made by you, but you've got to carry the water. I again just think that this is a game of three card Monty from House leadership, that we were all negotiating this bill and it was not everything that everybody wanted. We've all said that, but this
This was literally a change of the game, or as I said, a game of three card Monty, where leadership decided they were going to shuffle up the walnut shells and try to take it out from underneath us. I think that this is a very dishonest action by them, and it was sort of shady. And that's why a bill that I actually helped negotiate, I'm going to be voting no on, because I think that what this says in the larger picture is that irrespective of what members negotiate in good faith with other members, leadership can capriciously snap their fingers and decide to take what is a bipartisan bill and take it in a completely different direction. And to Representative Dean's comment of earlier, yes, last year was a very partisan election bill, and that is contrary to what has been the case for many years. But this was to be a bipartisan bill, and a bipartisan bill is where both sides don't love it but don't hate it, argued for some things to be put in or taken out, and there are still some things that they would rather have not be in there. That's what we did. That's not what we're doing here, because this, I believe, to use the Secretary's words, this is now the shiny object. And the thing that's going to be coming up on Monday is apparently, as directed by the House leadership, that is the elections bill. So it's going to be very difficult to support this, Mr. Chair. And again, I just thank you for your effort and Chair Dean for the effort that we put in, and the Secretary. We met and we negotiated, and like I said, came away with some things and didn't come away with things that we wanted. But I can't support this, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Quam, if you can be quick.
Independent of what is in here and what is happening outside, I am very concerned of the lack of addressing election integrity and would not have voted for this bill independent of what leadership is trying to do on the outside. I think anytime we touch election statute, we must keep in mind that we have to have the public confidence in the election and address election integrity, and I feel that this bill neglects that.
Thank you. I see no further comments. I'll renew my motion that House File 3499 as...
Mr. Chair.
Oh, that's right. Representative Albright, you wanted to say something.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to lay this bill as amended on the table.
A motion has been made to lay this on the table.
I would ask for a roll call if that is appropriate in light of digital committee work. So I recognize that it may just require it anyway. So,
with that, Ms. Spreck, can you take the roll? Call the roll. Motion to lay it on the table.
Yep. Chair Nelson?
No.
Vice Chair Claiborne?
No.
Representative Albright?
Yes.
Representative Akam?
No.
Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Freiberg?
No.
Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Hertas?
Yes.
Representative Hewitt?
No.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Keel?
Yes.
Representative Lippert?
No.
Representative Long?
No.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative Nash?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
7 ayes and 11 nays.
So members, with that, I'll renew my motion. The House File 3499, as amended, be passed and move and referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those, I can say, Representative Ms. Spreck, if you could call the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Claiborne?
Aye.
Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Akam?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Green?
No.
Representative Hertoff?
No.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keel?
No.
Representative Lippert?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Quab?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
11 ayes and 7 nays.
The motion has been approved. It's on its way to Ways and Means. Members, the next bill we have is House File 2768, and I'll move that to be in front of us. And members, what we're doing here on this bill is that because there was a slight glitch in when we shut down for the COVID, the actual bill that was the labor agreement bill is kind of right now kind of stuck between the labor committee. It was referred to us, but it didn't get to us. So what we're going to do is we're going to amend the labor agreements onto House File 2768 with a delete all amendment. And so members, I'll move House File 2768 to be before us. And then I will also move the DE, get my right number here, the DE2, the House File 2768 DE2 amendment. And I'm going to hand this over to Representative Lilly, who's here to testify. He's originally carrying the bill for this. And members, we are planning on, just so you know, currently in 2768, I am the chief author, but we're going to be moving this and having a motion next Tuesday when we have session to switch authors, and Representative Leon Lilly will be the chief author of 2768 with the labor contracts. And Representative Lilly, if you want to explain the bill, or maybe you want Mr. Hubinger to explain the bill. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, Mr. Chair. And members, thank you for doing this. I'm still trying to get used to this modern world of Zoom. I like it, but it's a little different, so bear with me. I miss you all. It's just kind of so like Chair Nelson said, we're going to modify this. We got kind of caught up in the transition of the COVID, and then to the bill got kind of stalled there from the Labor Committee. We had a good hearing there, and some of you are on that committee, so you've already heard some of this. But it's essentially the contracts bill, ratifying the contracts for our the labor contracts and compensation plans for the state employees and the benefits plan. These plans are negotiated between the MMB and the labor groups, and these negotiations go on for a little while, you know, and we just, part of the reason that there was some delay is we just received two more contracts. And so those are added in. That's the engineers and the nurses to the other contracts. And we were clear about that in the other committees. We said, hey, there's going to be some other contracts that are going to be catching up. And so we weren't playing hide the football or anything. It was just kind of, just kind of working through the process. So, and that's happened in past bienniums too. I mean, we've done something very similar. So as you go through the bill, I'm just going to go through it quickly. And then if you want real information, I'm going to pass it to more in depth to Mr. Hubinger, who's quite a star. And then we have people that are available to answer questions too from MMB. I don't know if the commissioner, I can't see him on my screen, if he's still available. But as you look at the bill, subsection one is AFSCME. It's a pretty big work group, about 15,000 workers. And then you work into the subsection two, and that's MAPE, and there's quite a few workers. And you know, we're very much more paying attention to what our state workers are doing now with this COVID. And we could go through a great list of some of the different work that these workers are doing. Subsection 3 is radio communication, mostly working with the public safety kind of area. Subsection 4 is middle management. Subsection 5 is Minnesota State administrative and service faculty. So like advisors and financial services and student services. Subsection 6 is inter-faculty organization at the state university and system. Subsection 7 is AFSCME correction workers and working at our state prisons and many of those facilities. Subsection 8 is state residential educators. So that'd be like Purpich, or the deaf and blind school. And we also have teachers that are working in the correction system and that sort of thing. Subsection 9 is the state college faculty and community technical college faculty. Subsection 10 is this the engineers that I mentioned earlier that just got rolled back in. And that's mostly a lot of MnDOT staff and team. And then subsection 11, again, the nurses, and those might be at the working again in the correction system or and certainly in the VA that we're hearing quite a bit about in the news right now. And then towards the end, there's compensation plans, and there's two of those, MNSCU personal plan for administrators is subsection 1, and then subsection 2 is a commissioner's plan for a group of employees that are on representatives. So that's kind of a high level kind of skim through, but if the chair is okay with it, I'd like to pass to Mr. Hubinger and have him go a little more in depth. And again, thank you. This bill's co-authored by Representative O'Neill. I would imagine she's still, I didn't check in with her. I have to be totally honest. After these two other contracts came in, she signed on to the original bill without them, but I can't imagine things have changed, but I don't want to say that she's, you know, maybe she's changed her mind. I don't think so, but I just want to be totally upfront and honest about that. So if Mr. Chair, if you'd be willing to pass to Mr. Hubinger, and I'd appreciate that.
Mr. Hubinger, and I've got a couple questions that you can answer in your testimony. These plans, my understanding is that they were built into the current budget that we have, that we passed last year. So this is not new money that's going to be added, have to be allocated for these bills. This was built into the forecast as we did last, as we passed last year. And I can't remember what the other question I had, but if you want to go on and explain these in greater depth, if you got, and then we'll take questions from the members. Mr. Hubinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission and the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. I think I'll just do the brief overview and then go back to your question, Mr. Chair, about the contracts being within budget. As was indicated, these contracts are for the current 2021 biennium and are effective retroactively to July 1st of 2019. Insurance is a significant component of the contract costs. The insurance provisions are negotiated by a joint labor management committee, and as a result, the insurance benefits are comparable across all of the contracts. There were not any changes in the underlying plan design, but there were significant increases in co-pays and deductibles, which all of us as members and staff are experiencing. Because this is a finance committee, I'll focus on those aspects. The salary increases are similar across most of the contracts. There's a 2.25% across the board increase effective July 1st of 2019. There is a 2.5% across the board increase effective July 1st of this calendar year, July 20. The contracts all have provisions in them for merit-based increases that are provided on the employee's anniversary date. The amounts of those step increases vary across contracts, but are generally between 2.75% and 3.5%. These performance-based increases are only available to employees who are not at the top of their salary ranges. As a result, about half of state employees are eligible for these merit-based increases. I point out that the three contracts for the Minsky faculty have somewhat different compensation increase provisions, a different pattern, and generally they are lower than the cost increases in the other state contracts. The subcommittee has a tracking sheet that it uses to compare costs of the settlements. That's on the last page of the staff summary that I think was provided to you. There's a lot of numbers in there, but if we look at two significant numbers, one is the percentage cost impact of these contracts on the current 2021 biennium. MMB estimates that the cost impact of these contracts, if ratified, would be about 4.8%. The subcommittee also studies and follows the impact of these cost impacts on the next biennium, on the 22-23 biennium. And MMB estimates that the impact of these contracts on the 22-23 would be about 8.2%. As Chair Nelson pointed out, there is no appropriation tied to the bill. Agencies are required to pay for the cost of these contracts within their existing appropriations. Mr. Chair, that's a quick summary of the cost impacts of the bill.
So members, I've got Representative Nash, you've got your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will defer. I'll come back if you'll put me on the list just a little bit lower.
Okay, Representative, next person is Representative Vogel. And I know Representative Vogel submitted a spreadsheet that's in your documents that we have. Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, if we could bring up the spreadsheet, it's basically it's just a little bit of a remanufacture of the one that was on the last page of the presentation. And just as a little explanation, looking through the spreadsheet, there's a number of columns on the one that I did that are highlighted at the bottom in yellow that do basically a summary. And there's a little bit of a difference between columns G and J. And I'm not sure exactly how to explain that. If there's questions on that, that might be something that Commissioner Franz could comment on, because it generally, as I understand it, column G is the projected base from the legislation that we actually passed, and column J is what actually is happening. So there's somewhat of a difference there, and I actually took column J as the assumption for where we will be from the 2021 biennial budget, because that apparently is what's happening. I also added a column Q. And the reason I did that was because I wanted to get the total dollar impact here. And I want people to know that I'm not against the contracts necessarily, but this is a time and place where we don't know what's going on. And if you look at the 18-19 is probably going to be the last budget year for a while where we will end with a surplus. Now, we don't know what's going to happen by June of 21, but it doesn't appear real helpful right now or hopeful that we're going to get through that with a surplus. So the last time we may have had a real surplus at the end of a biennium will be the 18-19. So what I wanted to do is look at what are the real dollar costs that we're facing here with these contracts. Not that we shouldn't be trying to negotiate contracts and do things, but once we approve them, we're then set to take those increases in no matter whether we have the money or not. And but what to me, if you go to the bottom right-hand corner where it looks at the difference of that would come out of the next biennium, because we're doing that in this biennium, you can see that from 18-19, that lowest number in yellow, which would be the last maybe surplus year, to what would be the next biennium, which could easily be a deficit year, we're up over $1.3 billion in compensation. And just from a business standpoint, I think businesses are starting to not necessarily pull back on raises because they know it's a tight labor market, but they're also starting to not promise things that they don't know if they can deliver because they don't know what the economy is going to be looking at. So that's why I wanted to present this with a little more definition, especially as we start looking into the end of this biennium and then into the next one, because once these contracts are approved, we're committed. And I'm not so sure that not knowing what we are facing right now is a good time to do this. So Mr. Chair and committee members, that's why I just can't support this at this point, not because I don't want to see the contracts go into effect, but just because I don't think it's a prudent decision for the state when we don't know what the resources are going to be available in the future to make good on what we're promising today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. France, Commissioner France, would you be? Do you want to comment?
Mr. Chair, I would like to first of all. Well, do you want me to comment about this particular spreadsheet or about just in general about the contracts?
Probably both, and if you want to say your name for the tape, also.
Oh, sure. My name is Myron Franz. I'm Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. I'd like to make some general comments first and then get to the questions that Representative Vogel raised with his spreadsheet. By the way, we got the spreadsheet last night at 6 p.m., so we haven't had time to fully analyze it. I appreciate the effort put into it, but I didn't finish working last night until 10 p.m., so I'm sorry, but I just looked at it this morning for the first time, and I'm not going to comment on spreadsheets. I haven't had the time to really analyze and study myself. So anyway, with that in mind, I just want to mention that, one of the things that I certainly agree with the concept that we're in really different and difficult times. I'm the first one to say that I don't know the answers to some of the questions that are coming up. As you all know, I will be the first one to say I don't know when I don't know. I'm not going to say things I don't understand and I can't foresee. But I will say this, that when we negotiated these contracts almost a year ago, clearly in a different situation, but one of the things that we tried to do, and I think we need to walk into this discussion, understanding how we got to where we got to in terms of negotiating these contracts. So it was a situation where we've seen our workforce continue to compete more and more with the private sector. And as you all remember, the last civil forecast we had, you could see that the workforce was shrinking in Minnesota in terms of available workers. And we were competing more and more with outside employers and trying to attract talent and retain talent inside of state government. And if anything, I've learned that the talent that we have in state government is truly unbelievable. The amount of work and effort and dedication that we've seen just in the last month in response to COVID-19 should remind everybody how thankful we should be about the people who have been working at DEED, for example, in setting up this unemployment system that's the best in the country. And we've been able to withstand incredible numbers, and they've had to ramp up in order to make those things work. The people at the Department of Health who have responded just night and day to this terrible crisis, you know, the people at the direct, the 24/7 operations, the corrections, the direct care and treatment, there are so many people, and there are so many of us supporting those people. So I couldn't be more proud of the work that we have in this workforce and how they've stepped up. When we were negotiating this contract last summer, the goal was to make sure that Minnesota remained competitive, and we continue to retain the talent that we have, and we continue to attract new talent. Because as you know, with the baby boomers, and I'm one of those baby boomers, so as the baby boomers are retiring, we need to replace workers every year. We have thousands of vacancies every year in top priority jobs, priority one and two jobs. We classify all the workforce into priority one, two, three, and four. Priority one jobs relate to the public safety and health of Minnesotans. Priority two is primarily more of the financial support and managing the state's system to make sure we can keep the government running. And priorities three and four are those support services that can be disrupted momentarily if needed. But we've had to reassess what that means in this COVID-19 crisis. The idea that workers would be so critical, because at MMB, we are now at about 93% of our workforce at MMB is teleworking. And the net number, I don't know what it was when we started. That's incredible. That's dramatic. Would never have happened but for the people at Minute and the leadership of Commissioner Tara Tomes to help us do this and do it in a way that works. I mean, that, as we're all learning, this is not simple stuff always. So anyway, so this idea of making sure that we had a contract where the ATB, the across-the-board increase in fiscal year 2020 was 2.25%, and the one for 2021 was 2.5%. But that's just part of it. As Mr. Ubinger talked a little bit about, there are a lot of provisions in there about the health insurance component where we saved $30 million because the people willing to take on more, the workers are willing to take on more of the cost of copays and other deductibles. That's something that they were willing to agree to as part of this contract. And I want to thank Mr. Huminger and Representative Lilly and the chair for taking the time and effort to get all these contracts together. I mean, some of them were negotiated last summer. Some of them were just recently negotiated. This process of negotiation is an ongoing, it's an organic process, and it takes time, and sometimes we don't get these done until a little bit later on. So thank you for taking the time to slow down, let them all become part of this process so we can look at what's going forward in a collective sort of a way. But I think one of the things that, before I take more questions, I want to make sure that I recognize the difficult situation we're in. You know, we have, in the state of Minnesota, we have implemented a hiring freeze, as you know, and we don't have all the numbers yet. We're starting to analyze that, but we're seeing the number of positions being posted obviously has dropped a lot by 20%, 30%, 40%. We're seeing the number of hires drop significantly. We are currently reducing the state workforce simply by the hiring freeze. And we are making exceptions. I want to be right up front about that because there are priority one and two services that we will continue to make exceptions for as corrections, direct care and treatment, at Deed, for example, and at Minute. So we are managing the workforce through the hiring freeze very effectively. That is the best way, by the way, to manage the workforce in terms of saving money. If you lay people off, you have to pay unemployment and you have to pay their benefits. It's a very costly system. You only actually save money to maybe 6 months or later. So this process of the hiring freeze is providing this first tool. The other thing that we've done is a redeployment center, where we have asked our employees to be willing to make adjustments and work in different locations to support the priority one and two services. And once again, we have two phone calls every week with our labor partners on Tuesday and on Friday. And what we've been able to do is work out a process to come to agreement about how we make these deployments, because these deployments are, you know, different than the rules that we have typically that apply. We have a lot of flexibility by our union partners and our employees willing to support one another. So we've been engaged in this redeployment center, people being redeployed within their agency or to other agencies. And then also, as you know, the governor indicated, he and the chief of staff and the commissioners all took a 10% pay cut as part of our effort to show our leadership and willing to shoulder some of this responsibility. But we are in a unique situation. As you all know, we will be providing a budget projection the first week of May. I don't know if we've got the exact date yet. This budget projection is really going to help us decide exactly what are the priorities and what are the resources that we have available. And I think to Representative Vogel's point, that is a critical part of what we need to have to make these decisions. But our current position is that these contracts were negotiated in good faith. They represent a lot of different provisions beyond just the increase in terms of what we were able to do with the insurance benefits, what we were able to do with corrections and providing some relief for their corrections unit and unit number 8. We're just having difficulty with overtime, as you know. So we think that these contracts represent another step forward. And I think it would be really difficult to say to our workforce today that if these aren't ratified, by the way, you're all going to take a pay cut on May 18th. I don't see how you do that, frankly. I mean, I would not want to go tell these people who are working and putting themselves in difficult situations and say, by the way, we're not going to ratify these contracts. Now, I agree that we need to look and examine the budget situation, and we are asking all of our agencies to examine their spending, and we will analyze the revenue that's been coming in through April. That'll be part of the May budget projection. As I mentioned, it's unusual, and we do that in part because we want to give the legislature the best information that we have in May. And I think it's really important to remember also, we're not going to decide all issues for the rest of this biennium in May. This is an ongoing process. These issues are going to change. They change every day, and they're going to continue to change. We will have the best available information in May that we can have, and we'll have to make the best decisions we can make, knowing we may decide 2 months later or 3 months later or 4 months later, you know what, we have better information now, it's different, and we need to make some other changes. So I just want to make it clear that this is a dynamic situation. None of us have gone through this before. And what is important and what I appreciate about having this conversation today, and I frankly miss this opportunity to have these conversations because I learned so much from all of you about what you see as critical, what you see as important, because we need that information. And we are moving, this thing is moving so fast. I mean, if you look at the testing agreement we set up yesterday with the University of Minnesota and Mayo Clinic, I think we'll be a leader in the country in terms of the ability to ramp up the testing. But you know what that means? It means we need more people at the Department of Health to do the contact tracing part of that to make it effective. Testing is only as effective as some of your contact tracing is to figure out where those issues have popped up in terms of the virus. So I know I'm kind of going offline and talking about a number of different things, but I think the key for me is that we believe that our workers deserve our support. We support this contract. We know we have some variables to contend with, and we'll continue to monitor those. But I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Uminger and Mr. Chair and Representative Lilly, for getting this bill in shape.
So I have some hands up here. Representative Albright. You can unmute.
There you go.
Representative Albright, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Franz, I have some comments, but I'll preface it in a pretty straightforward manner. Do these contracts take into account the current economic and budget circumstances?
Representative or Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair and Representative, well, obviously they were negotiated, some of them were negotiated a year ago. So they take into context the nature of our workforce, the demands that the state of Minnesota puts on us to deliver these services. And so clearly they have not taken into account the new financial economic situation that we're facing today with the COVID-19 crisis.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Franz, these contracts were negotiated a number of months ago, but they were effective with July 1st of 19. So the various entities and employees of those associations, they've been realizing their step increases since the 1st of July. Is that correct?
Mayor Franz.
Mr. Chair and Representative, partially. For those contracts that were ratified and submitted to the Subcommittee on Employee Relations and were either passed on or not voted down, they did go into effect retroactively. Now, not all the contracts before you today in this new bill have had that. Those that were ratified and submitted after the legislative session started, those have not been able to go back to July 1. So a big percentage, I will say, of these eight contracts did go back, in terms of the number of employees, did go back retroactive to July 1, but not all of them.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, or Commissioner Franz, you know, one of the things that you articulated is the appreciation for the support and the work that these various state employees, state agency employees have provided to the state. And I think that goes without question that we're very appreciative of the efforts and the sacrifice that they're making particularly on the health side, as well as on the employment and also on the enterprise side, making sure that questions get answered and that our private sector is supported in a manner that keeps people informed. But I want to draw your attention to the current circumstances. As you said, we live in a very dynamic and fluid situation that is rapidly changing. And the dilemma that I'm hearing from a lot of my constituents, and I think that is shared by a number of the representatives around the table or on the screen that I look at, the private sector is not looking at increases. They're not looking at talent. They're looking at trying to keep the water from swamping the boat. And as I shared last week, you know, the analogy of we're all in the same boat together. No, we're not. We're all in the same storm together, but we have different circumstances that we have to contend with. And while I appreciate the efforts of negotiating these contracts, I cannot in good conscience support an initiative that raises the expectation of $1.3 billion onto the taxpayers of this state at a time when they don't even know if they're going to meet payroll next week, much less provide to MMB the revenue from whatever sales they can generate through online or otherwise. I mean, this is a very desperate time for the state, Commissioner. And I think that, you know, while I appreciate the administration's willingness to take a 10% pay cut, in light of that, I'm just wondering why we are asking to ratify contracts that fly in the face of current circumstances, that suggest that the state is running alone and private enterprise is floundering out there, and we're not recognizing that. You know, the axiom, you know, we're all in this together. Well, are we? It certainly doesn't seem like these contracts. And to the point of, I heard it said earlier by one of the representatives, but I can assure you that Representative O'Neill is not in support of this contract going forward in light of current circumstances. Mr. Chair, I'll wait for final comments, but I'll end there.
Representative Knapp.
I think that was my name I called, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Nash, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to echo what Representative Albright said. I'll share some of the similar stories that you might have heard me talk about last week on the floor. I spent a lot of time going around my district trying to encourage people, and I get a lot of questions about what's going on right now. I have business owners in my district who don't even know if they're going to be open next week. And some of them follow what we do here because they're home. And I've had a couple of people text me today and they said, are you insane? Are you really taking up a bill to provide an increase in pay for state workers when I don't even know how I'm going to pay myself, let alone my employees? So, folks, you got to know that in your district, there are people who are on the edge of going out of business. So they were full steam ahead. They were moving really well. Economy was firing on all cylinders. They were hiring people. And then they hit this wall. And we have seen people who are at the brink. We've seen suicides from business owners. We've seen people who are really in a tenuous position. What does it say to them, to the people in your district, my district, and everybody's district who are fighting just to stay alive, that we're going to pass a bill that provides an increase in pay for state workers? I just think that that's incredibly clunky and bad, and it looks awful. And I guess my question is, if these contracts were being negotiated in today's circumstances, would they look the same? I have to think that they wouldn't, But I would offer that question to Commissioner Franz. But members, this is, it's not the same boat as Representative Albright said. If this is passed, this is saying that some folks will get a lifeboat in this very large storm and others will not. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And members, remember, we've got, we have a hard stop at 9:30. We are going to be taking a vote on this before we adjourn for today. So members, if you can keep your comments concise, and if somebody else has already said what you need to say, if you can live with what they've already has been said. But members, I've got next on my list, I've got Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, I believe I did ask the question of Commissioner Franz.
Okay, Representative Franz, Mr. Franz, Commissioner Franz.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative, a couple things. I think certainly the stories you described are heartbreaking and difficult for everyone. I mean, these situations are really important for us to address. But I think to paint the entire state with that few stories ignores the overall complex reality of the situation. So yes, there are people who are struggling, and yes, we need to help them, and yes, we need to provide opportunities for them to recover. But I think the other thing that you need to realize is 82% in Minnesota, 82% of the businesses are essential and are working today. So those businesses continue to demand and need services. So the fact that Minnesota government and state services provide a lot of support in the way of inspections and permits. My phone just went off. And so it there's a lot of support that goes into the economic infrastructure that's provided by the state of Minnesota and its workforce. The worst thing to do right now is to pull back on providing that support to make sure that our economy can run and make these adjustments to this current situation. So I think that it's not as simple as a simple situation. It is complex, and there are terrible stories out there. And the point that I'm trying to make is that there is a number of people inside of state government that are on the front line providing those kind of frontline services that we need to support. And they go to work every day, and I consider them all heroes because they go into situations that are potentially dangerous to them, and they put themselves out there, and they're doing what they can. We've got people at Department of Health and DEED, as I mentioned, and other agencies that are supporting this infrastructure to both provide the direct care and treatment that we need to for these people that are under our care, but we also need to provide the support for the economic engine that we have in the state of Minnesota. So I think one of the things that I want to make it clear is that the stories that we have out there, we have a lot of stories where people in the private sector are asking for our help, asking us to provide more service. And I think that clearly the economic situation has changed. And I'm not saying that there are different factors that we might change our analysis at this point. But the fact of the matter is we're at this point. We have these contracts. They've been negotiated. We need to decide the best course of action going forward. And I think at this point that there are a number of different tools that we have to manage the way that this government responds to the crisis and the way that we employ and deploy people to support Minnesotans that need our services. That's one of the reasons why we made the groundbreaking agreement yesterday with the University of Minnesota and Mayo to provide the testing and to provide more support at the state level for that testing. It's that testing that's going to provide the opportunity for us to provide more businesses to come online because we'll have more knowledge, we'll have more information about how this virus works. If you listen to Dr. Osterholm yesterday explain the difficulty and the complexity of this virus and what we need to do to be nimble to respond to it, really requires that we stand up our network of state services in a way that supports that. So I just want to make it clear, I understand your concerns and your stories, and I couldn't feel worse about them than you do. I really truly feel and for those folks, and we've got to figure out ways to help them going forward. And I think our response as a legislature and executive can help make this more bearable for some of these people. Thank you.
Representative Green.
Well, thank you. And for Commissioner Franz, you just brought up so many different subjects. I could probably go on to way past 9:30, but I'll stick to my original comments. And, you know, I've watched people, and many people in my district are in despair. They've gone from frustration to anger to despair. And this is just a terrible message to send. And when we don't have even your updated forecast in May yet, this is very, very premature. You know, you made the comments that these people are working. I don't think they're taking a pay cut. If this contracts aren't ratified, it'll just fall back to what they had before. So there is no pay cut. And yet the people who are paying the bill, the private sector, have taken a huge pay cut. We don't even know where we're going to be. To ratify these contracts at this point is just utterly irresponsible. Thank you.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Franz. I just want to make a few comments based on the conversation that I'm hearing this morning. First, I would like to remind everyone that state employees are in fact also our constituents. They live in our communities, they work in our communities, they stimulate the economies in our communities. They're not some mythical entity hanging out there. They are our neighbors, they are our family members, they are citizens of our state. I would also like to commend the people who did the negotiation of these contracts. They are significantly below national averages. They have held a tight rein on the percentages of these increases. And that also means that our state workers have skin in the game. They took less than national averages because they understand the time that we are currently living in. The other thing I want to make sure that everyone has heard is that 40% of our state employees will not qualify for anything. And it is a pay cut if your salary has been, let's just say, $100 since July of 2019. And now, in this time of 2020, we're going to say, oh, by the way, that contract that we said was in place as of July 2019 is no longer in place, and you now receive $90. I realize that those are numbers I just made up, but that's what happens. So, yes, in fact, it would be a pay cut for these employees who are working with our private sector to keep our private sector running. So anyway, that's all I'll have to say. Thank you very much.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Be concise, please. We're running out of time, and we will be voting on this. And if we, at a 25 after, if we get to that point, we're going to take up the final bill and vote on it. So members, go ahead, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that qualifier of time. I don't think anybody is really trying to be divisive of we against them in terms of the private sector or the public sector employment. I think everybody should have a clear understanding of the value of everybody's job, no matter which side of the fence you may happen to derive your income from. But Mr. Franz, I know that the government or state of Minnesota prefers to use a different indice. I think it's the GPI with regard to measuring the cost of doing business. And you earlier had mentioned that you have to compete with the private sector. Would it not be better to be using the same indices of labor contracts and measuring the cost of living using the CPI rather than the GPI? It seems as though if you're only measuring the cost of doing business and adding the costs from a government price inflator, that it's skewed in terms of the indice that you're using. For example, while we've been discussing, I researched here, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics, the Midwest region, the consumer price index has only gone up 1% over the last year through March of 2020 for all items. And if you took out fuel and food, it would be a little bit higher. But given the recent turn of events, fuel has been a big savings in terms of the cost of living. Obviously, fuel prices are way down, and that adds to discretionary spending for the typical worker, whether you're a public worker or a private worker.
Representative Hertas, can you wrap up
so
quickly?
My question is, how can you reconcile the percents of increases given that the CPI is only 1%.
Commissioner France, if you want to quickly answer that question.
Mr. Chair and Representative, you know, I don't have that in front of me, and it's always helpful to have that information in front of you when you're being asked a question. So I'm happy to have this conversation offline, but we've been using that for a number of years, so I'd have to review it. I don't have that information in front of me. Thank you.
Representative Albright, you can wrap up quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm very concerned about our actions on this bill as well today. I think it sends a very poor precedent in light of current economic situations. And to the commissioner's own point, I think if we don't hold up on ratification of these, to commissioner's own point, it does ignore the complex reality of the current situation. Members, I would urge a no vote on this. Let's recognize that the whole state is under extreme duress, and the folks that are providing the revenue to the state to provide the increases for the jobs are desperate for some faction of hope. I think this flies in the face of what we should do as an elected body to provide them with that hope and that direction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly, if you want to quickly wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members and Commissioner. I very much appreciate the discussion. I have the utmost respect. Representative Vogel, I love your homework with the graphs, and those are real. Those are real numbers, and we know them. Commissioner Franz knows it. The world's changing, and we're going to deal with it. But this is the right thing. This is our team. They're out there working hard. You could kind of spin it a couple different ways, which, you know, we all are good at. But the reality is these people are out there at the VA home fighting for us. They're out inspecting these processing plants. And I don't know. I don't want to.
Don't filibuster your own bill. If you can wrap up.
Well, anyways, thank you for hearing it this morning. And I believe we'll hear some more as it progresses. But I think it's a really good discussion, actually. Thank you.
With that, members, I will renew my motion that House File 2768, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Ms. Spreck, can you take the roll?
Yes. Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Clevorn?
Aye.
Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Akam?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Green?
No.
Representative Hertas?
Still needs work, no.
Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Jordan?
Aye.
Representative Keel?
No.
Representative Lippert?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Mason? Representative Mason? I think that's an aye. Representative Nash?
No.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Quam?
Representative?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Mason, can you unmute you with that? Representative
aye.
Mason?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. 11 ayes and 7 nays.
With that, the motion's passed, or the motion or the bill's re-referred to Ways and Means. And members, we got 2 minutes here. If you want everybody unmute themselves, Representative Clavore, you want to take up the minutes?
Yes, I move that the minutes be approved as written.
Quick, I noticed they say March 16th, and I think they're supposed to be April 16th.
I will amend that. Sorry.
Thank you. I didn't see that. Thank you. I appreciate it.
The motion has been made to approve the minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is approved. thank you, members, for your time, and thank you for your good work and being considerate, and so we can get done on time. And with that, members, we are adjourned.